Okay, I'm going to call this meeting to order. Can we all stand for the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the power of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight. Can we have a roll call, please?
Director Gatchell. Director Ohelski.
Present.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Sesenia. President Forcroy.
I'm here.
And Director Sesenia will be here in just about a minute. Oh, here he comes. I see him.
Okay, let it be noted, Director Sesenia.
I will mark him as present.
Okay, I'm going to rearrange our agenda items, seeing as we have a big public turnout, especially for one thing. So I'm going to bump our public comment for items not on the agenda to our first item on our agenda. And I'd like to just talk about how that's going to work. Public comment is 3 minutes, and there's little lights on the lectern up there that Ron will be controlling. So green means go, yellow means you're close, and red is 3 minutes is up. And during public comment, all questions are going to be held until the end of public comment, and if possible, they will be answered at that time. Okay, with that, I'd like to open public comment for items not on this agenda.
Ron, would you like me to take over the presentation so I can put the timer up for those online?
That's okay. We'll just use the box in the room.
Perfect. If you're online and you'd like to make a public comment for items not on the agenda, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
One last thing. Please state your name into the microphone so we can capture those for the minute.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Hi, my name's Karen Kimura, and I've lived and worked in Los Osos for over 40 years. My kids grew up here and went to school here. This is home. I'm here tonight to introduce you to Los Osos Pickleball. We're a group of about 50 people who play right here at our Los Osos Community Park. Pickleball is the fastest growing sport in America with approximately 4.8 million players. It's easy to learn and it's great for all ages. The game of pickleball is a sort of cross between badminton, tennis, ping pong, and it's even being taught in our schools. The game originated in 1965 on Bainbridge Island in Washington. The intention was to play badminton, but they couldn't find a shuttlecock, so they substituted a wiffle ball, switched to wooden paddles, lowered the net, and a new sport was born. There's some confusion on how the name came about, but some say it was named after their family dog, Pickles. The game was originally played with wooden paddles, but now most paddles are a composite material, and the ball has also changed somewhat. Still looks kind of like a wiffle ball. The court size is 20 feet by 44 feet, the same as badminton. However, the net is lower. Los Osos Pickleball began as a group of six women in February of this year. We were playing on the courts in Morro Bay, but at the same time, South Bay Boulevard was being rerouted due to the Morro Bay sewer plant construction, and gas prices were raising madly. It would take longer to get there and back. And when we arrived, we'd often find that the courts were too busy. We wouldn't be able to play. We decided we needed to play in our own community. It would be more economical, convenient, and we didn't want to overload the courts in Morro Bay. There are pickleball courts in Morro Bay, Cayucas, and San Luis Obispo. Many are hybrid courts shared with tennis courts and basketball courts. Nonetheless, we wanted to play in our community, closer to home, to help lower the carbon footprint, encourage sustainability, and to help build community. We'd observed that the tennis courts here in Los Osos are often empty, and we asked the SLO County Parks and Recreation Department if we could play pickleball on the courts, and they said, as long as we followed the rules for the use of the courts, it was fine. We spoke with a few tennis players, and they gave us advice on the best times to use the courts and how to avoid impacting tennis players. We are now over 50 players and growing, and we invite all of you to come join in the community, to come join us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Sandy Green, and I've lived in Los Osos since 1978 and been able to raise my family here, and now I'm a retired teacher. So what is Los Osos Pickleball? Well, as you can see, there's a whole group of us out here. We meet four times a week over at the courts, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday at noon, and Friday nights at 6 o'clock. Takes us usually about 3 hours to complete setup, play, and takedown. How did we make all that happen? Well, we have four privately owned nets, and we have a string and tape system. So we have strings that make the borders of our courts, and we tape down the corners of them. And we also tape three lines on the court, so we're not making any impact on the courts at all. Takes about 15 minutes to set up each court, but we really want to thank the Parks and Rec Department for they came and marked the courts on just the intersections of the lines so that it's easier for us to set up. In the beginning, we had our tape measures out there, and now it's gotten quite easier for us. So we're really thankful for that. We're also really thankful for the county for installing a donated equipment box so that we can keep all of our nets and equipment and first aid kit in there through the Adopt a Park program. And because of all that, we've grown. Like Karen said, we started out with 6 women, and we actually now have over 60 people on our list that have played with us since February. We've actually been keeping track of people since the box was installed in August, and 90% of the time we have over 10 players each of those Tuesdays and Thursdays, and over 75% of the time we have over 15 players. The most we've had is 22. Today we had 20. Friday nights and Sundays have grown too, and we usually have over 10 players on the courts at those times. So we're actually setting up often 2 courts and sometimes 4 full courts to set up for people to play on. So as you can see, in just the last 8 months, we've grown from 6 players to over 60, creating this amazing community. And we get new players every day. It's fun and exciting, great exercise, a little dangerous sometimes. And we just have this wonderful community of people who are here to play and stay. So we're asking for your support in making that happen. Thank you. We have one other person that wants to speak for us tonight. He's not here. He's getting a COVID shot. We're going to ask Diane to try to step in. She doesn't have his notes, but do the best you can.
Hi, my name is Diane Souza. I've lived here since 1988. We have been craving pickleball in this community for years. And thanks to Karen and Sandy for making it happen. The fact that we play here has lessened the impact on the Morro Bay pickleball. So it's great. As I recall, I went over, the person who was supposed to speak is Ron Roach, and he's not here, but the gist of his speech was to ask the whatever it is that does the Parks and Rec, your committee that advises the Parks and Rec, to help us. We would like our own pickleball courts rather than having to set up for set up on the tennis courts. He had some great ideas, but the best idea is this. There are 3 tennis courts. There's the tennis court that's furthest, that's closest to maybe where there's going to be a dog park. And you could put 4 pickleball courts there with minimal cost, which would be the best idea, you know, and they could still play tennis on there. Many courts have both tennis lines, pickleball lines, basketball lines. It's just part of the game to know which lines are yours. So we're asking for your help, and we would love for you to come out and see what we do. On October 25th, Supervisor Don Ortiz Legg will be coming out at 1 o'clock, from 1 to 3. I think that's a Tuesday or a Thursday. It's a Tuesday. So please come out and join us and see what we do. It's really something for the community, and it's fantastic. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Pam Hostetter. I was going to ask about one thing, but now this has become an issue. Obviously, I've mentioned I'm a tennis player, and I've advocated for the pickleball players many times for their own courts, not shadow lines on our tennis courts. And I've advocated for using part of the dog park for those pickleball courts. If you've been coming to the meetings. So the reason that it doesn't work to do the double lines is because for the tennis players, it's quite a distraction in terms of playing. Also, what I'm hearing is they're trying to use the part of the courts, the three courts, the one that the tennis players actually fundraised the money for and purchased that court. So that's certainly not going to set really well with the tennis players. We're different beasts, you know, we're just not. I liken it to being soccer and golf on the same grass. It's a different kind of game compared to tennis. And there are some things that I appreciate the fact that they are doing afternoons, because tennis players tend not to play in the afternoon because of the wind, it affects the game. And they've set up their pickleball in the afternoons. It's working. But to take over one of our courts and do shadow lines is, I think, really unfair to tennis players, because we also have large numbers of tennis players. We maintain those courts. We've put up all the wind screens. We're the ones that provide all the chairs. We do all the cleaning of the courts. We put up the nets. And now you're asking to take one of our courts away and alternate, change it so that it's less usable for us, particularly on the court that we purchased, we bought. So, real quick, the other thing is I've come to check about the letter that possibly you guys were going to write for regarding the homelessness. That was the other thing I was here for today. Okay,
thank you. Actually, that was the truth.
Are you ready for me? Becky McFarland. I've lived here for, I think, 38 years now. A lot of familiar faces here, and I'm always happy to see people that want to have a lot of fun. Something I have learned in dealing with the whole homeless situation, I don't know if you recognize my name from next door and all over the place trying to clean up Palisades Avenue from what it was a year ago, which was a complete disaster. Pam got involved in that because the tennis players were so impacted on that. I do know pickleball is lots of fun, and I'm glad you're playing it. In Morro Bay, I did have an issue with it because they took away roller derby for teenage girls for a pickleball court. And I just would encourage you to raise some money like they did. I mean, you look like a great group and you're energetic. Do something like that so it's not taking away from something that's there. I did learn these are the most used tennis courts in the county park ones, which I was shocked, but we learned that from parks people. So I don't want to argue about it. I'm just saying some things there. But I also would like to ask your help, because Palisades Avenue is still impacted by the county dumping a safe parking program on our street that was advertised to the entire nation. And we cannot get them to finish the job that they're supposed to do to keep that street clear. It's better, but it took us thousands of hours to get that street clear and to help out the tennis courts, the pickleball players. So I'm advocating for all of you to help us out in getting our town center to be clear from, we had two meth dealers, we had a pedophile rapist in front of the playground for months that they would not remove. And so for your sakes, your kids' sakes, your grandkids' sakes, please join in hounding these people, the county, the sheriffs, to keep our little, you know, that's the only park we have. It's our only library. People walk and ride their bikes there, and we still need help because it's basically Pam and I and Pat West that are going to board meetings, writing letters, making phone calls, coming here. And if we had not done that, I mean, how many of you saw what it looked like a year ago? Like 70 people were living on that street, and they weren't local people for the most part. We have some guy that's lived there for 3 years in the same spot. He doesn't cause problems like some, but he dumps buckets of pee on the grass in front of the library. We used to do kids programs on that grass. So please, you know, put some energy there too. And I hope you get pickleball courts. I think it's great. And I hope our community can come together and make that happen. Sorry, I get nervous.
Hey, do we have any other public comments?
If you're online and you want to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment online.
Okay, well, thank you all for your enthusiasm and for your comments. I know it's on our radar, definitely, about pickleball. It sounds like maybe an important day for us to show up on the 25th with Don Legg.
Thank you.
I will try to be there. No promises, I have to work still.
Can I answer Pam's question?
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about the letter.
The letter is gonna be on our next agenda.
Next month?
Next month. It'll be on the November agenda. We'll put it out. It'll be a draft because the board will approve that. And so it'll be a draft form, and you can provide input on the final. Well, come by the office and talk, and we'll I'd love your comments. Okay.
And
do you have any questions for any of the pickleball people? Or
I was going to open that one thing real quick. I know I talked to Karen about the Parks and Rec committee meeting, which was supposed to be next Tuesday. That meeting's going to be postponed at least until November, because we're waiting on a couple of things to kind of firm up before we have that meeting. So there will not be a Parks and Rec committee meeting in October, but there will be coming up soon. So yeah, does anybody on the board have any questions?
Go ahead. I had a clarifying question. I'm not certain what you're asking for. You say three tennis courts could become four pickleball courts. How does that work?
There's just one tennis court at the far end.
And you
it
just
become four pickleball courts in the space of one.
Okay, so that's what your request is to.
We're actually requesting a multitude of things. We're requesting proper pickleball courts so that we can play correctly. One idea is that. One idea is build us a pickleball court somewhere in the park area. The other option would be build us a pickleball court somewhere else in this community. That's we're asking for your help with this. You guys know more of what's going on in the community than we do. We would like your assistance in getting that's really what we're doing.
Okay, thank you. So what's the to build one from scratch? Do you have approximate
to
cost?
Build, to build a single tennis court, and this is an approximation if I ask.
That's fine. That. Ballpark is fine.
Yeah. To do one single tennis court, which would then provide us with four pickleball courts, it would be probably between $100,000 and $150,000. That's if you own the land.
So you need like a location. Are you guys willing to fundraise for that?
We fundraise for everything else we've done, so I don't see why not. The biggest problem is the location. We were told for years that tennis courts would be around on the lot, and now we're being told that that's going to be a dog park. And not that I don't want dog parks, I think it's wonderful too, but we really need, as you can see, we really need pickleball courts. It's getting huge, and we need a place to
Okay, thank you for clarifying. Thank you.
I thought I heard that pickleball courts could be shared with tennis courts, basketball courts. What attempt has there been to share basketball courts to look around at other paved areas in town?
In San Luis Obispo, at Meadow Park, there are basketball courts and they are shadow painted for pickleball. They play pickleball there
locally.
In Los Osos?
Yes.
We don't have any. We need a concrete surface, and all of the tennis courts or all the basketball courts around here are asphalt.
Have to have concrete.
The middle tennis court is asphalt, so that's the part that's true.
Well, it has to be a smooth surface with a polymer coat.
We could probably get into this at Parks and Rec Committee. I think that's probably more appropriate to get into details and nuts and bolts. Thank you.
Get on the agenda for that so that we can have share some other information maybe on it, please, and maybe get something moving. We've just done so much in 8 months that we're just excited, and we do have the momentum to fundraise. We do have the momentum to do things, and so we'd just like to keep that going, and we need your help to make that happen.
That's something that we can get done.
And I think that really, really what this reflects in Los Osos is that Los Osos is woefully underserved for our parks. And so we have a community of, you know, tennis players, we have a community of dog lovers, and we have a community of pickleball players that are growing and growing, and we are woefully underserved. And pickleball is a unique kind of organization. It's unique in the sense that it tend to older players, and I'm, you know, an older player, and you can see a lot of older people. So we don't really have that niche in this community. But I think what we're looking at, it's a shame that people begin to look at each other as we're at odds, when really it's the entire community. We don't have community playing fields for our kids. We're dependent on schools. And so it's a crime that in our community we don't have enough. You know.
No, that's absolutely true. And that's where we need to work together as a community at the county level too, because, you know, we have no land use authority here, but we do have a community plan that is being updated as we speak. And it's very important that all of those things get addressed in that community plan. So that's how I think I'm going to leave it.
I think what we're asking you guys to do is help us represent.
Yeah, and that makes sense. So I think Parks and Rec, like Chuck said, is the place to start that. And yeah, I don't see why we can't agendize that the next Parks and Rec meeting.
So and on that community plan update, how do people input on it?
LOCAC. That's my next. You should show up at LOCAC, because that's, we'll kind of don't have a supervisor, but that's the Los Osos. So that's where he comes to LOCAC to get input from the community. So absolutely. I'm so glad I also think we're underparked, and I'm so glad you're here saying that, because that's what we need, or they need to hear it. So the more of you that show up, the better. But I hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate
different than.
We're not gonna do that.
You can take that outside.
I'm gonna go ahead and end public comment. Thank you everybody for showing up. We have some really important general action items coming up for anybody who would like to stay and be part of those discussions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I thought everyone was here for the intertie. No, it gets hard at times to reel it back in.
Okay, our next agenda item is going to be our public hearing. So at this time, I would like to open the public hearing to adopt ordinance number 2022-02 of the LOCSD to amend Title I to include the provisions of the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act in District Code.
Great, thank you very much. I've got a brief presentation since we've discussed this at our last meeting in depth. It's just a quick review of what the California Uniform Public Construction Accounting Cost Accounting Act is. It's passed way back in 1983. It applies to public works projects. Jurisdictions, it provides jurisdictions with uniform cost accounting standards for construction work and contracted for, which is also helpful to our contracting community because a lot of other communities in the county have adopted this. So it's kind of the same set of rules. There is a commission that oversees it up in Sacramento, which we would be accountable to. We do qualify as a public agency under the act. And as I was saying, there's over 300 special districts alone. That's not cities or counties that participate. And the another big benefit for us is that it'll save us time and money as we go out to bid for some of these smaller projects, which do take a lot of time and effort on staff's behalf. Just a quick recount of the thresholds, $0 to $60,000 projects can be performed by our employees. It's called force account, or can be negotiated by contractor purchase order. A little over 60,000 to 200,000 can be informal procedures that set up in the act and board approval of the contracts are required. And then you get into bigger projects over 200,000, you do the formal bidding process, which we've done quite a bit of here lately for our bigger projects. So with that, that's my presentation, and I'll answer any questions the board may have or public.
Okay. Does anybody on the board have any questions about this ordinance?
I just have a comment. I like the idea of streamlining the process. I think it's a good idea.
Well, we're doing a lot of capital projects now, and this would be helpful in the smaller ones.
Okay, with that.
And Finance Committee has seen this issue?
They weighed in before our last board meeting and were supportive.
Okay.
Okay, with that, I'll open this item for public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
It's not pickleball.
And there's no public comment online.
Okay, with that, we'll bring it back to the board to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the board adopts in second reading by title only, ordinance 2022-02, amending and adding chapter 1.04 to title 1 of the district code.
I'll second.
Okay, we have motion and a second. I see no further discussion. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Ohulski.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Vice President Tesenia.
Yes.
President Forkfroy.
Yes.
Then can I just make sure the motion was made by Director Ohulski? It was hard for me to hear on my end.
Yes, it was.
I made Perfect. The motion, so and Chris, the only female here, seconded it.
I got that one. I just wanted to make sure. Thank you so much.
Okay, our motion is adopted. Moving on to general action items. And item 3A, our water supply resiliency intertie project. Item 1 has a presentation.
I have a presentation for this as well. A little bit of background. We did take this to the UAC at their last meeting and had a kind of lengthy discussion about the intertie project and securing supplemental water for the community. So a little bit of background. If you recall back in September of 2021, I did a presentation on the implementation of the basin plan. And the second half of that report was updating the board on the county regional water infrastructure resiliency plan. That plan ranked Los Osos as one of the top 5 most vulnerable communities in the county because of our single source of water, which is local groundwater. Based on that report, part of the action taken by the board was direct me to investigate alternative water supply resiliency projects that could be considered. In the plan, there was two alternatives suggested. One was securing state water project water. The other one was to secure Whale Rock Reservoir water. Whale Rock Reservoir is shared by the CMC, Cal Poly, and the city. And there's a commission that governs that. And it is also raw water. So if we were going to pursue something with Whale Rock, we would have to build a treatment plant here once it got here. So that was one of the kind of checks against that. The other one, after discussing with the city of San Luis Obispo, since they actually manage that reservoir and the project for the other commissioners, they were not open to sharing any portion of that water supply with Los Osos. So that put us on focus for Chorro Valley pipeline connection as our preferred alternative. The strategy is that we utilize supplemental water to help in the short term balance the basin, in the long term to add the resiliency to the groundwater basin. We've stated over and over when we've done updates that, you know, we understand state water it's been available, but it decreases in what allocations come up year to year. And with extended drought like we're in, the allocations have been quite low. Our strategy is to use the water source when there are wet years where we can decrease our pumping in order to allow that wet year runoff to recharge our basin and not impact it by pumping it. So it's really kind of the reverse of what most people use state water for. We want to use it as a backup supply and don't become reliant on it, because we want to continue to implement the basin plan, but use it in wet years, in multiple wet years when it's available. So there's actually two parts to this. Tonight, we're looking mostly at the intertie, the pipeline, which we'll get into in just a minute. But the other part is securing the supplemental water, which is much more complicated and complex. And so we'll talk about that also in here in just a minute. Just a real brief summary of what the technical memorandum that Wallace Group put together is going to be. Proposed to be a 12-inch pipeline that runs approximately 2.5 miles. It is a little tricky because there's two creek crossings, and there's also two of those creek crossings mean we have to use the bridges as the mechanism to cross those creeks unless we do horizontal boring. The alignment would run from Santa Isabel over to down South Bay Boulevard over to Highway 1. And we did consider three options, which I'll talk to in just a moment here once we get over to Highway 1. The design is to deliver approximately 200 acre feet per year. That's about the amount of water that we're looking at is in our sustainable yield is that buffer, that 80% buffer of what we're using. So we will have to refine that number as we get into design, but that's kind of the premise of where that 200 acre feet of water came from. The pipeline will be sized that could serve additional needs if water was available in the future from whatever source. Going back to the options, they all, as I said, go over to Highway 1. One turns easterly down Quintana. I think I'll just wait for the map on this and we can run through these a little bit more. But our preferred one is the one heading to the east on Quintana because of utility congestion going under Highway 1 and all the congestion to the west of South Bay Boulevard.
I'm getting pretty dusted off and know about that congestion. Everybody's seen it with their own eyes.
Yeah, those open trenches and what was going on over there. So I know it's hard to see this map, but basically the red line down at the bottom is Santa Isabel running across South Bay over. And then I got a little bit better close up of the three alternatives, still not great. As you can see, the green line going to the right on the diagram is where we can go. It's a little bit further of a route, but there's no utility congestion and we can actually get close to Highway 1 and for a horizontal bore under the highway, which will be a negotiation with Caltrans, obviously, to get that easement. The one going straight under, unfortunately, would have been the best for us, but that is so impacted. And there's actually, when they built the Chorro Valley Pipeline, put a turnout for Los Osos right there, right to the west of where it would go into the new treatment wastewater plant there. We considered going to try to get to that turnout heading west, but you can see it'd be a very long horizontal board. It'd take easements from private property owners as well as Caltrans. So that's why we chose option one.
Anytime you describe your preferred option as the, what was that, the least undesirable?
Right. We had no good options. And then Wallace Group did a good job of putting together a cost estimation. Again, this is probably hard to read. You know, the actual pipeline cost is about $5.2 million. Design and construction management is about another $1.4 million. And Wallace Group thought it was prudent to add a large contingency on top of that to just for any uncertainties that we aren't aware of right now. That being another $1.3 million, which brings us up to about $8 million. And if the project has moved forward, it's important to understand that the district would be paying for half, and Golden State has indicated their interest in participation and pay the other half. Of course, with S&T in that mix, but they use so little that it would be a very, very small percentage. So in order to pay, I'm asking that we move into the CEQA, the environmental work, because until we do that work, we're not gonna be able to find funding mechanisms like grants or even be considered for like state revolving fund loans or any other low interest type loans like from USDA. So I'm recommending that we move ahead with that work. There'd be some, it wouldn't be like we'd jump into that right away because there's still some work to be done with the county in terms of actually them allowing a connection since they own the Chorro Valley branch. But I'd like to get that part of the project moving, and the estimated cost of that is about $80,000. And I'm when I thought about it, you know, we could have probably paid for it with Fund 500 with the fund balance that we have plus reserves. But since this is a district-wide project, I thought this might be a good year to reallocate some funds from the Zone A allocations from Fund 301 back over to Fund 500. And I put this together so you could see, you know, what the result of that was. If you recall, in last fiscal year, the Fund 500, boy, it was like we were about at 40%. I think it was 38%. I should remember that number. And we decreased it down to that 17.7 in the top table. So this would be kind of moving back to almost what we had last fiscal year, plus a little bit of money. But you can see the percentages and the dollar amount. You know, I don't want to say we don't need the money in Fund 301, because I think we're going to have some large expenses coming up there as well. But this point in time, we did get that $331,000 refund for in last fiscal year, and we have a decrease of about $300,000 for this fiscal year in our Schedule A charges. So I want to talk a little bit about the water supply component. Our desire is to purchase Table A state water. Table A means that you have capacity in the Colonial Pass treatment plant, which is the pinch point in the capacity. There's pipeline capacity down the coast, or the coastal branch. There's capacity in the Chorro Valley branch, but the where it gets hung up is at the treatment facility way at the front end of the coastal branch. The Table A, you buy into that capacity and have a better guarantee of receiving water when it's available. Other options are to partner with Morro Bay. We've talked with Morro Bay extensively. In preliminary talks, they think it's an interesting idea, but they're so busy right now trying to get their wastewater project finished. There hasn't been much headway there, but there's still time to talk with them. And then there's also the opportunity that there's a large portion of unallocated state water, I'll go move to here, that the flood control district has. that can be negotiated. The Board of Supervisors are anxious to allocate that 14,400 acre feet because it's on everybody's property tax bill in the county, even if you're not using the project. So they're trying to get that off the tax bills. So as you can see, the county has a 25,000 acre foot per year allocation. Subcontractors take up about 10,500 acre of that, and that includes drought buffer, which is another dynamic that's very confusing, and I thought we wouldn't get into that tonight. But there it still leaves that 14,400 acre feet of unsubscribed allocation. So next steps are similar to the recommendation I made in the report. Talking with the county, they want a letter from us stating that we are interested. This isn't any sort of a commitment, but it's stating that we are interested. And so I had a draft letter attached to the report. Direct staff me to continue negotiations to secure the water and then move forward with the environmental work that's based on the preferred design in the report. And again, this will help us line up grant funding and other funding sources. So with that, this is the recommendation with the added number four, which is some moving of the Zone A revenue. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Thank you, Ron. Yeah, I think this is an important strategic project for our community to help build our resiliency. So thank you for the time you've put into this so far. It's very, very helpful the way you presented this. Okay, does anybody have any comments for Ron or questions?
I have questions, which you might have answered last meeting, but so this is for the adjustment in the reserves would be for this financial year, or are we not even ready this financial year?
This would be, and it's not reserves, it's just reallocating the Zone A. None of that has been put into reserve yet. Yes, okay. And my hope is to get the project started, or the CEQA review part of the project moving this fiscal year.
Okay. All right. And then once it's established, is there like a minimum amount to take to keep the pipes working?
That's a great question. I think Matthew had a similar question in terms of flow. That would be really detailed more in the design. You know, Wallace Group has indicated that we can build a 12-inch pipeline. There's enough head pressure that pump stations would probably not be warranted or needed to pump it. And we would have to work on the flow in terms of how much water is moving to the pipe diameter, because there would be concerns with, residual chlorine. But, it's been recognized there'd have to be a blow off at 1 inch to flush that line. And there is a basin at Santa Isabel and South Bay that could be used for that purpose.
So like if in a given year we weren't getting an allocation, the next time we used it, we'd need to flush the line.
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. So I guess my other question was, what happens if there isn't any excess allocation? But I guess that's it. We don't draw any, and the next time we can, we flush the line.
Right. It's interesting because with this drought that we're in, it's definitely showing the vulnerabilities of the state water project. There's no doubt about that. But as a whole, when you're connected to the regional system, and this is not just countywide regional, this is statewide, you're part of the solutions that are going to be coming from the top down, state down. And there are regional solutions that the county is working on as part of that resiliency plan that I mentioned, that if we're not connected to that pipe to some other, we cannot participate.
Wouldn't benefit from it.
We cannot benefit from any of the regional efforts and the money and expertise that will go into that from others.
Okay. What is the issue with the creek crossings? What happens?
Well, there's the concern about treated chlorinated water if you have a pipeline break. And so the impacts on the aquatic habitat. So those are the creek crossings are a concern. But typically, you have an oversized pipe that the actual pipe goes in. So if you do have a break, it's contained.
So let's say we did get this 14,000 acre feet. What's the cost of that allocation ballpark, which I realize that maybe it's variable? Well,
that's the overall amount of water that's available in the county's unsubscribed, unallocated. We're going to look for 200 acre feet.
And that's water on paper.
Right.
That they have allocated or unallocated.
Oh, so we're not solving their problem, really?
No, we're going to hopefully help solve part of it.
And then does that, the cost of the acre feet change depending on the year? Like if it's a wet year, is it less? If
it's dry year, it's not really, it is based on delivery. That's part of the formula from the Department of Water Resources. But there's also a maintenance cost for the whole aqueduct. You know, so we, right now, the state subcontractors like Pismo Beach, Morro Bay, et cetera, you know, they get a bill from DWR on an annual basis on maintenance costs for up to Colonial Pass, and that's for the main state water project. And then CCWA, the California Central California Water Agency, which is operates the coastal branch, our part, there is maintenance costs there as well. So there are other costs associated with it. And that's blended into the cost per acre foot that you typically pay. So when allocations are down, of course, you don't pay the water portion, but you still pay the maintenance costs because those are fixed.
And so we're not responsible for maintaining that pipe, though. It's like we pay and somebody else maintains it.
Right, except we would be responsible for a 2.5 mile pipe going.
So that would be our guys taking care of that. Let's see. Okay. On the state water project letter, it talks about being inside or outside the district. What is it? Are we inside or outside?
The district. I'm sorry, I don't have that up.
Sorry, the excess entitlement policies. I didn't know.
We're
San Luis Obispo. Yes, I'm sorry.
That's the county. San Luis Obispo County is
so we're
the district.
Inside.
We're inside the district.
Okay. They
mentioned that because there are options to sell that state water outside the county. There's people that are going to buy it.
Okay. Thank you for.
Oh, no. Great questions. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Yes. Ron, and you, Big's overall cost breakdown, it talked about a $60,000 environmental review cost, and yet you're asking for $80,000. Is that just for contingencies, or did we get a refined estimate from?
No, it's still 60, but then whenever we do any type of project, that would be the actual physical work. But it always takes money to put together the RFP and then manage the contracts. Okay. Okay. And so that is for the soft cost,
I call it. Total. Okay. And you answered my other question. We had already allocated some Zone A money to Fund 500 for the year.
Right.
Because you mentioned that maybe we could have done this just from Fund 500 without reallocating.
Right.
I'm always looking at the best place to spend that Zone A money. This project is certainly that kind of thing. So I was just wondering, I guess, do we need the whole 80? Since you said fire is going to have some expenditures this year that...
We're okay on this year. That's why I was saying this is probably one of the better years to make, you know, a reallocation of that. I was going to tell you in our GM report, we do have a building condition assessment RFP out, which I think is going to come back once we get hire a contract or a consultant, and there's going to be issues. And so that's going to be money in the future.
And actually, we'd already... in planning the budget for Fund 500, planned on that 17.7% being there.
Correct.
So to then tap it for something, yeah, okay. Okay. That's the questions I have.
I have one, round two.
Okay.
When we, you know, assuming that we get down the line on this and that it becomes a project, what are our options to fund $8 million public improvement project like this?
Hopefully the best option is grant. You know, the state's been very proactive in promoting resiliency projects, but of course that's all timing, when the state's doing what and what grants are available. There's state revolving fund loans. I'm not sure where the interest rate is on that, but it's typically extremely low. I've talked with USDA. They have loans and grants programs, which we qualify for. There's one more I was thinking of, but typically, you know, those are the general things we would be pursuing.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. iBank.
Yeah, yeah.
Would be another one.
But yeah, this is a big district-wide project, and I think, you know, that was an interesting part about Golden State and paying half potentially, but ultimately, it's a district-wide project, and I kind of feel like that could be handled through us and built through us. I mean, everybody's going to end up paying a piece of this,
right,
one way or another, and I'm not sure what the benefits would be about co-mingling that with a private entity.
Well, you know, there's a example to follow. Napomo Community Services District built a pipeline from Santa Maria to bring in state water, and Golden State has contracted with them to pay their proportional share. And so there's a contractual relationship example that we have there that I think could work for us.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know if that would end up being a fund 500 kind of a thing. Maybe it needs to be its own fund at some point, because those two things are going to get very blurry.
No, that's a very good point.
What's happening next? That's a different animal.
Yeah.
But those are my thoughts. Anybody else? Okay, I'm going to open this for public comment.
Okay, Becky, give me. Sorry, go ahead.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
Okay, don't start the clock yet. We have to get Ron in sync so we can. I have a slideshow for you.
Well, Ron's running the clock, so.
Okay. I didn't know if Laura was from Texas or what. Hi, Laura.
Hi. We're working together on it.
Okay.
And she's on Central Time, so you just lost an hour, which translates to a minute.
Let's see.
Oops. I better get to the beginning of mine.
Okay, Laura, I'm not getting it up here.
No problem. I'll take care of it.
Thank you.
Are you able to see it?
Yes.
Yeah, there it is. And so...
Okay, ready, set, go.
Well, wait. So, you know, I'll say next or I'll try to.
So, Laura, you're going to control this?
Yes, I can control it.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll try to remember to say next.
Okay.
Okay, Becky McFarland again. I put together a little slideshow about the State Water Project because I'm not so sure that this project actually is the best thing for our town. And I wanted to make sure everybody actually knows what the state where it comes from and the issues that we're having. So go to the next slide. We set the clock back. Laura, next slide.
It's up.
She did.
Is it not up?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was looking at it. I thought it was it. I'm sorry. So if you can see in here up at the top, there it says Lake Almanor. This is the Feather River watershed. And I don't know if people have been up there. I used to go up there. It's way above Sacramento. So Lake Almanor area, it runs down through the Feather River watershed to Lake Oroville, down through the San Joaquin Delta, and then down to the San Luis Reservoir down there. Go to the next one. So this is where it all begins. There's all these different branches of it, and 61% of the state water project supply is held in Lake Oroville. So go to the next one. I learned something new. Half of the energy produced by that dam is used for moving water. So this watershed is really prone to wildfire. And here you can see fires that happened in 2020 and 2021. It was 1,282,244 acres burned. Go to the next one. What this has to do with water is when those trees are gone, there's no canopy to protect the snow. And so there's less water being stored up in the mountains to go into the state water project. And it also actually changes our water cycle. Go to the next one. Without the shade, the water's going into the air, a lot of it, instead of going into the rivers and creeks and down to the water project. Next one. This is California snowpack from this year. You can see the top one is March, then down in May, and this is July. There's basically nothing, no snowpack at all. Go to the next one. This is where the project starts. You can see Feather River, Orville Dam, Sacramento River. There's Sacramento, the city. Next one. Down to the Delta, then there's San Luis Reservoir, and it cruises down and through the coastal branch of the aqueduct. Let's go to the next one. This is San Luis Reservoir this summer. There's a brown line that kind of goes through the middle of the used to be full lettering. That's where the water line usually is. Can I have like a couple seconds? Yeah, there's like couples. Okay. So there's not as much water as we hope there will be. This is the pipeline that wants to take the water to our town. Next one. I'm hoping that we could put this money towards getting rid of nitrates in our aquifer. We have an amazing aquifer, but a lot of it's polluted. Next one. I'd also like to see, go back. There's some other things we haven't done in our town that are happening around the state. I love that we're not playing around with getting rid of grass. We still have many lawns in our towns. San Diego is doing all kinds of rebate programs for gutters, rainwater catchment. We don't have that going on here. We don't have free rain barrels that are going out. So I would like to see some of those things done before we spend $8 million when there's water already here. So that's my point, is like, is this the best thing for us to do? Go for iffy water when we know there's water here. So thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Do we have any other public comment? Online?
There's none online.
Okay. With that, I'll bring this matter back to the board. Do we have any further discussion?
Well, I should point out that the Utility Advisory Committee saw this report and were firmly behind the recommendation that we move forward with the environmental review and letter to the county, and that we explore option one, the least undesirable of the options. Through the utility spaghetti maze. I certainly understand the hesitation about state water project, but again, that's it's not there. It's not there, and we'll have our water. Again, this is resiliency. It's backup, and I do like the more conservation. Always, always, always. We need to expand those programs. We've talked about that. It does not take the place of the things that are in the basin plan.
Could I ask you, how about more nitrate cleaning for the upper aquifer?
Very expensive. We've looked at that and looked at that. Golden State's not having a good experience with that, is my understanding.
Neither are we. We're looking at maybe phasing it out. One, it's not sustainable because you create a brine that has to be hauled to a place that may not be there in the future. The other is when we were doing I was doing the cost analysis today. If we were doing full production out of our South Bay Upper, just the transportation costs and the cost of chemicals is $2,000 an acre foot. And that's not for the electricity or any of the equipment or anything else. So it's very expensive water. And it's maybe over time, once the basin's been, or the zone C's been pumped more, it'll clean up on its own. But to create more nitrate treatment facilities, I think is a waste of money.
San Fernando Valley.
I'm not sure.
They're everywhere.
I think. Okay. So yeah, I guess my thought on it is, yeah, this is a strategic project to build resiliency. That's the bottom line. We're not expecting water in dry years. We're expecting water in wet years. And that's the point, is that in wet years, the rain and the water we get here can refill the aquifer and serve as our storage for future dry years. And the other benefit to this is that our community will be able to participate and be at the table for any regional plans that are, we're talking about that regionally right now, but any plans we will be able to participate in. And I think that's vitally important that we have a seat at that table also. So with that, I will look for a motion.
And I will make that motion that we, the board directs staff to send a correspondence to the county expressing the district's interest in acquiring state water, and that we continue negotiations to secure water, preferably table A state water, which is a more assured and reliable water contract. Move forward with the environmental work based on the preliminary preferred design presented in the technical memorandum in order to position the project for future grant and other funding, and then reallocate $80,000 of Zone A revenue from Fund 301 to Fund 500 to cover the cost of the environmental work.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Okay, moving on to our next agenda item. Not public comment. It is administrative and committee reports. Fire department report. She's here.
Good evening. Hello. I made it.
Thank you.
I'm not standing on a mountain somewhere.
And now you know about pickleball.
I do. It's in my town too. It looks like fun. We play at our stations as well. So as far as emergency activity for the reporting period, nothing really of any significance. Pretty much our standard medical aids, a little bit of fires here and there, but nothing of any major property damage or anything like that. Our special programs and projects, we're welcoming two new employees to Station 15. We hired two engineer paramedics. One will be a limited term, and the other one is a permanent employee. Austin Gentry is coming to us from the Riverside unit. He's coming off of Riverside Moreno Valley Truck 2, which is a very busy truck company, and will bring a lot of new experience and knowledge base to our station. And then Bree Sarenborg has been a PCF in San Luis Obispo County for a number of years, and she's also been a seasonal firefighter with CAL FIRE and has recently been working with Cambria Ambulance as a paramedic up there. So be good to have another local person on staff and adding some depth to our program. And she will be going into the permanent position behind Casey Jenkins, who promoted to fire captain at Station 15. So lots of people moving around. The volunteer fire capacity grant, we were successful in our application. That's a 50-50 cost sharing grant. We'll be using that to do some personal protective equipment, some firefighting nozzles, and moving out of the gas-powered world of chainsaws and things of that nature, and moving into the battery-powered world. Chainsaws will still remain gas-powered for right now, just due to the horsepower that we need and the torque that we need. The technology is not quite there yet, but our exhaust fans and things of that nature and our lighting equipment will all be battery-powered now. So that will actually be before you on a later agenda item for approval and acceptance of the grant. The grant was written for $31,000 some change, and so the district would be responsible for 50% of that, and the state would kick in the other 50%. So we've been successful in the last, I believe, 3 years in getting that grant. So kudos to the station staff on writing those reports and writing that application and being successful in getting it. Nice thing is COVID's kind of settled down and we're able to go back out in public again. And we're attending public events. We attended St. Elizabeth's International Day, did a static display there. We've been going to the Baywood Farmers Market doing some sidewalk CPR. I went to the Rotary Grandparents Day, did side work, CPR there. It seems like that's a very successful program. We're just getting the word out and just helping people get exposed to it and be more comfortable if the situation arises that they can do CPR. We had FEMA came out with San Luis Obispo County OES to conduct a nuclear disaster preparedness drill. Basically, they came out to the station and the kits that are at each one of the stations, they tasked the station staff with opening those kits, going down the checklist and just making sure that they're familiar with those. So we were met with some good marks on that one. And then we also participate with the emergency vehicle show at Madonna Inn, where we do some static displays, and then we also do some practical cutting up of cars. And so our Medic Squad 15 participated in that event. So hoping to keep going with that stuff, and hopefully we're getting into the schools and starting to kind of open things up and get the message back out about fire prevention and awareness and things of that nature. And to report any questions.
Question. I want to thank you. We got your new format last month.
Yes.
And I know you weren't here, but we had a lot of questions and we went through it and everybody really, really liked that detail and data. So yeah. Thanks for putting that
together. I talked to Ron about it. And so I'm going to improve it even more. It sounds like we're going down the right path.
Yeah.
Make it a little bit easier to read and maybe less acronyms, because the fire department, we like to do acronyms, or at least maybe have a better description of what they are. So anybody that's just opening the report can understand what's there. But I know one of the things that was of interest was the amount of times that we're providing aid to other agencies or other agencies are providing aid to us. So we're going to make sure that that's in there in a well-illustrated way, probably some sort of bar graph. Yeah. So it's easier to tell what's going on out there. And that, you know, whether you're being taken advantage of or not.
Well, and I think it was great. It was eye-opening, you know, I think for everybody to see, you know, yeah, we're going here. And then we got people backfilling or coming yep. to help us out. And that mutual aid really is an important part. So.
Yep. And the intent of that will be to the emergency activity portion of this report will change. Sure. And this information will go away. And then you'll have a more clean document that's a little more detailed that has more pertinent information in it other than, yeah, we went to some medical aids.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your work on it. It's great.
Cool.
Yes, yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, moving to Sheriff's Department. Are they online by any chance?
Thanks.
They are. Sergeant Coys is available.
Okay. Yeah, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear
yes.
you.
All right. Hey, everybody, I'm Elliot Coys, Sergeant with the Sheriff's Office. I'll kind of go through our stats for the month of September, and then a couple notable incidents and any questions. So we had last month in September, we had 8 assault or battery calls for service, about 34 just general disturbance calls for service, 2 burglaries, 6 thefts, 3 vandalisms, 1 theft of mail, no phone scams, 22 suspicious circumstances calls, which could be, you know, various number of things, 24 proactive enforcement stops, and 18 preventative patrol activities, such as foot patrol, that kind of thing. You know, obviously, just keep in mind with the statistics, you know, their statistics are just a number, and you kind of have to deep dive into each individual case to see what actually the true outcome of it was, but that's kind of our overall for last month. But notable thing I'll bring up that a lot of you probably heard of last night, we had that perimeter set up down on 11th and 12th. Kind of the summary of that was we call it ORC, which is Organized Retail Theft Crews. And what they do is mainly in big cities, Los Angeles and the Bay Area is prolific with them. And they essentially go in and just load up shopping carts with high value items, you know, really expensive bottles of alcohol, particularly in yesterday's incident at Ralph's. And so they had loaded it up about $5,000, a little more than $5,000 worth of alcohol from Ralph's and Los Osos, Albertsons in Morro Bay, and then I believe a CVS in St. Louis City. And our deputy luckily got there really quickly to Ralph's and was able to intercept them. We got one in custody after a short foot chase, and then the second suspect made it down to about like 11th and St. Louis Avenue area. That's where we set up the perimeter. We did a reverse 911 to everyone in that area. Ultimately ended up finding them hiding, hiding in a shed, no injuries to report or anything like that. So that was kind of the summary of yesterday's events. And that's all I got. Any questions for anybody?
No questions right now.
Can I ask a question?
No.
I was curious what was going on yesterday, so thanks for telling us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. The CHP, are they online today?
Mm-hmm. I sure am. Lieutenant Grimm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I'll go over our September incidents. We had 8 traffic collisions for the month of September. The first one was on September 2nd at 4:15 in the afternoon. It was a 4-vehicle minor injury traffic collision. There were 6 injured and they were all very minor, thankfully. And that was at Napomo and South Bay. On the 6th at 8:40 a.m., we had another 2-vehicle minor injury traffic collision, and that was at San Isabel at South Bay. On the 7th at 7:50 a.m., we had a non-injury 2-vehicle traffic collision, and that was at LOVR Jacaranda. On the 11th, we had a solo vehicle into a deer traffic collision. That was at South Bay and Turi. On the 22nd at 6:45 a.m., we had a 2-vehicle rollover collision with a minor injury. That was at 9th and Napomo. On the 23rd at 3:50 p.m. at LOVR and Paradise, we had a 2-vehicle non-injury traffic collision. On the 23rd also at 10:50 p.m., South Bay and San Isabel, we had a solo 2-vehicle non-injury traffic collision. And the 26th, 1:30 p.m., South Bay and San Isabel, a 2-vehicle non-injury traffic collision. We also had 1 felony DUI traffic collision. That was on the 10th at 8 p.m. at LOVR and Lariat Drive. That was involved 3 vehicles. One of them was a parked vehicle and very minor injuries, thankfully. We had 1 hit and run felony arrest. That was also a DUI or as a result of a DUI collision. That was at LOVR and Foothill. 2 vehicles, minor injuries, thankfully, on that. So everything we had was a minor injury, thankfully, for the month. And I believe we have the radar trailer still out there on LOVR.
Yeah, it's right as you come into town. Thank you for getting that back.
That should have been, I think it's been there for a couple of weeks now, I think, right?
It has been, definitely. That's I keep telling you, that's one of the number one things I get asked about is traffic speed through town. So appreciate your help on that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we're going to move to the GM report.
Thank you. I just have a quick update on a few things here. Mainly, I wanted to report out on the program Seawell, which we call Bay Oaks Well now. We're trying to transition. Successful drilling operation. They're trying to develop the well, and we were in the pump test phase, and our generator and pump burned up started the day before. Anyway, we're stuck at that phase until they can get a new pump and generator in to run the pump. But everything's going according to plan in terms of production, so we're very happy about that. What would be a project without a hiccup? On my general manager's report, I mentioned that we released our RFP for the building condition assessment for Station 15. Proposals will do back in on October 18th, so looking forward to that and seeing where the consultant we get and moving that project forward. Our audit is underway. We had the auditors in office for 3 days at the last week of September. Went smoothly. The new auditors are great to work with, and they've been very helpful. I did want to mention we had 2 staff work anniversaries. The first is Frank Sancion, who has been with the district for 23 years. I know you see him, he doesn't look that old, but he's been our workhorse for many, many years and a crew leader for a good part of that. And then Margaret has been with us for a total of 16 years. She started back in 2003, left in 2017, and has now been back for a couple of years. So anyway, both are great assets, and I always like to call out when we have those type of work anniversaries.
2 years already.
Wow. Yeah. And then, as always, I keep this drought reminder on my GM report. This is very important. You know, with the weather predictions for the upcoming winter, for continued dry conditions, you know, as we talked about, the conservation programs and our efforts are going to have to step up. We will be bringing some updates for you here shortly on our efforts so far, where water use is at, and we're going to have to make some big decisions at the beginning of January as we see how the winter does unfold. With that, I will answer any questions.
I don't have any. Anybody else on the board? Okay, then we're going to move to, there is no Parks and Rec report. There was no meeting in September. And again, that meeting this month has been canceled, and we're going to move that to November, December. We'll see about that. So Utilities Advisory Committee, I think you're going to tell us about that. You already looked
at it. Yeah. The main thing was the intertie project, but also want to remind Ron that we did have a request to agendize the discussion about the Basin Management Committee structure, JPA, that discussion. And I think that might get back to what you were talking about earlier in funding this intertie. Very difficult. Well, it's going to be tricky trying to separate out cost from our district versus the community. And maybe a JPA funding that pipeline is the way that should be done. That's just part of that discussion. So anyway, future agenda.
Yep.
And back to your drought reminder, as we see in our water production report, usage went up this month compared to last year. So we're backsliding a little bit. Let's pray for rain, but let's watch our water use as well.
Okay, how about our Finance Advisory Committee?
Lisa, our loan committee member, this FAC. Yes, appointed by, she is excellent. She recommended that the board approve the warrant register for September 2022. And Lisa recommended that the board receive and file the financial reports for the period ending August 31st. And we're changing the FAC meeting from Halloween, which would be the normal day on Monday, to the next day, Tuesday, November 1st.
And I would like to say we have a new committee member joining us in November. Rick Levesque.
Yeah, thanks for volunteering. We appreciate our volunteers.
Yes.
How about, did we have an emergency? We didn't have emergency services.
Yeah, we did.
The one I did. Oh man, I have to do report.
That's right, you're scrambling to find someone. Yeah.
I'm very impressed with how knowledgeable the committee members are.
At that meeting, we discussed the building condition assessment, RFP. We talked about the standard of cover study. I'm working with one of the committee members, Bob Newman, on refining that. Looking forward to bringing that to the next ESAC meeting. And we covered the budget and the court budget.
Thank you.
So is the current fire station our facility?
Yes.
Okay.
It was. First part was built in the 60s, and then the living quarters were built in the 70s. Okay. And then there's been some minor stuff, remodel stuff done since.
Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just, but it's still got value as a facility, maybe not as a fire station. But I'm just thinking all the decisions we're going to have to be making down the road.
It's part of the, is to develop a strategic plan for that.
Okay, any director's announcements, community interests, reports at public meetings, etc. And I don't think any previously asked questions. Does any director wish to pull a consent agenda item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open public comment for items on the administrative committee reports and the consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Sorry.
I have the question. So that this is comment on your report and these reports?
All those committees yes. Reports in the administration, yes.
Somebody needs to comment. Or it's going to get real boring around here. So thank you all for being on the CSD. I mean, we got to get some people here.
I'm just glad it was only for pickleball.
Yeah, I've been to some of those old ones. I would like to bring up, I know you were talking about we need to save water. We got to do something in this town to get the word out. What are we doing? Other than I see the sign, the rotary sign, but are there things going out? Well, I guess you have to tell me after I'm done talking. It just seems like we need to have a concerted effort towards conservation, whether it's people showing up at farmers market. I think I've offered to volunteer before. I'll sit at a table and pass out water conservation things, but there's a lot of people that really aren't familiar and don't seem to know what's going on with our water situation. Because I'll ask them, what do you think? What do you think about the water situation in our town? I don't know. I turn on the tap and water comes out. So I think that's something really important. I mean, it's shocking that people really don't get it and they don't know. I would like to see whichever committee, utilities or something, push either county or the water companies. We need to see cash for grass. We need to see some of these programs happening. And I'm not sure how to get that done. I have asked at county, but I'm asking here, let's get the community involved and get some more rebates. And something that, some water companies are offering them. My friend has Golden State. She didn't get any kind of rebate for having a tankless water heater. And so that needs to be across the town equal. Like CSD, people get the Flume or got a discount on Flume. The rest of the town doesn't, but those are things that would really help. And so if you could help or tell me how I can help push for that, I think that would be good for our town and our water supply. Thank you.
Any other public comments?
There are none online.
A quick response. It is difficult because we are kind of split half and half. We contact our 100 top water users monthly.
Yeah.
And work with them to try. Some are just not listening. What's going to happen there will have to be some sort of restriction that's going to be board enacted. But again, it's only half the town. So, we put out a newsletter, we put out messaging in the bills. We have been trying to especially hit the top users where we're trying. And, the rebate program, it's unfortunate. I was hoping that the county's water conservation study would be done by now. And that would help guide us because, we don't have a lot of money. And so I want to make sure what we spend is effective. So I've been waiting for that study to come out and they're supposed to identify where the savings is at, and that we could go for that. So anyway, more to come. You could try. That's the planning department. Good luck.
Yeah. We're just redirected. Okay. So with that, public comments over, I will go ahead and entertain a motion about the administrative committee reports and consent agenda. This one's teed up for you, Marshall. You're really good with this one.
I'm making a motion to go ahead and receive and file the committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I'm seconding it.
Sorry, I didn't speak for that. Were you able to hear that, Laura?
I was. Okay. It was faint, but I could hear you.
Okay, I believe I need to take a roll call vote on that.
Yes, resolutions.
So roll call.
Director Ohulke.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Vice President Sesenia.
Yes.
President Forcroy.
Yes. Okay, that moves us to future agenda items. The only thing I have written down, well, two. One is for pickleball at Parks and Rec, and the second is the BMC JPA structure for a future agenda item for the board.
You could add to us to that.
And we will have the Palisades.
Yeah, Palisades letter, was something that we couldn't get to this month, but we will for next month.
Yep.
Absolutely. Any closing board comments?
Be careful how you drive. The little bears are out at Baywood Elementary and everywhere else around town. And it's exciting. It's fun to see. I'd love to see the bicycles in the morning, but let's be careful.
Yeah, and Halloween's coming.
Yes. It's getting darker. Yeah. Earlier and later in the morning.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Meeting adjourned.
You know, I don't know.